What was he wearing? Well, he was wearing a red Argyle sweater and tan trousers and red shoes. No, he's not retarded.
Hi, is Jen there, please?
No.
No. Well, then, I guess we're done.
Whisper.
That was quick.
That's the end of that. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next time.
Wrong number.
We'll see you next time.
What's up, guys?
How are you doing? You've already met my horrible, nerdy ass.
Awful. I wish that never happened.
This is Denton. Denton is on the other line.
Then I would have no visual.
I think it's important because I think that nothing brings out a woman's best work than knowing there's a pasty, bald, horrible guy on the other end of the line.
I tried to run away, but there was nowhere to go. You kind of cornered me.
So you kind of pick your spots. I said, okay, she looks like she might be weak.
She's Are you guys hammered or no? Was that a joke?
No, I'm joking.
It's always a joke.
It's always a joke.
Or as we say in Boston, you guys fucking cocked.
Exactly. Dude.
But I'd be willing to bet Red isn't wearing pants right now.
I said no.
Well, that makes two of us.
They kind of hamper my on-the-go lifestyle, to be honest with you. They really just get in the way. All right. Welcome to another Surviving Grady podcast. My name is Red. His name is Denton, and tonight we are pleased, actually make that honored, to have with us our very first Emmy winner. We have an Emmy winner in the house with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Boston's own Jennifer Royal is our special guest. Jen is formerly of the Yes Network, where she covered the Yankees, and MASN, where she covered the Orioles and the Ravens, and now, for some reason, she's decided to slum with us for a little while here. She's back home in Boston. Heard recently on EEI and all sorts of other local outlets. Jen, welcome back to Boston.
Thank you, guys. Yes, you are interrupting my American Idol, so I must really like you both.
Is it good to be back home? You happy?
Oh, my goodness. I am breathing fresher air since I have left Baltimore. I am so happy to be home. It has been such, I don't even know what the word is, tumultuous couple years. And just being back in Boston and just not dealing with, you know, a lot of the negativity from Baltimore and just being home with my family. I haven't been home in nearly 15 years, so for me to be home and just to see my mom every day, and I have a new nephew. He just turned 1 year old. He actually just left my house. So, you know, babysitting him 2 days a week and visiting my friends in the city and my cousins. We go to brunch every Sunday, and my two best friends from high school I'm still really close with, and we've been trying to have dinner once a week. So it's been so great to just connect with my old life and start to build something new here in Boston, because like I said, I've been gone for so long, and I knew my next move after Maryland would be forever. So I chose Boston. I'm here to stay, and I just love it. Love every minute of it.
Fantastic. Well, it's our gain. It's a better place with you. It's a better place with you around.
Thank you.
Now, when you were in New York and you covered the Yankees, now, of course, the 2 years that stand out as the highs and lows of my existence as a human being are 2003, where I was actually in New Jersey when the Red Sox lost the ALCS in 2003.
Oh.
It was horrific. And then, of course, 2004 was the exact opposite. If the gods of baseball came to you at the end of 2003 and said, how can we make this up to you? If you described what happened in the 2004 ALCS, yes.
We couldn't have asked for anything better as Bostonians.
Exactly. Now, were you there in the thick of all this? Were you covering the Yankees then? How was that?
I wasn't there in 03. I was a freelance writer in 2003, but I did attend the Aaron Boone game. I was there as a fan. And then 2004, I covered all of that, and I couldn't even believe what was happening. I remember feeling so sorry for Boston. You know, I think I'm one of the few people who have experienced Boston and New York and this Red Sox-Yankee rivalry from both sides. You know, I'm so lucky to be from Boston and to have seen the Red Sox. I mean, I don't even want to say I was lucky to see their heartache, but don't you think 2004 almost kind of made it all worth it? Because it was so sweet as a Bostonian. And just to see the team, you know, get turned around has been really tremendous to watch, just to watch the whole thing unfold. But 2003 was a heartbreaker. I remember that, the Aaron Boone home run, and I remember screaming at Grady Little, "What are you doing?"
And I wish he heard you.
Everybody was, yeah, I'm sure he did. Well, the funny thing is, I was in New York for all of that, but when I first started working for the YES Network, they were so big on coverage of the visiting clubhouse, especially the Red Sox, because of the rivalry. So who better to throw in that locker room than, or that clubhouse, than me, because I was from Boston. So nice. Every time the Yankees played the Red Sox from, 4, 5, 6, and 7, I actually covered Boston.
That's awesome.
So I was actually sort of the New York, I was the Red Sox reporter based out of New York. And it wasn't that odd, because the New York Post and the New York Times and the Daily News had, you know, half of their writers in the Red Sox locker room as well, and then the Globe and the Herald had, you know, at least 10 people in the Yankees locker room. I think both papers did such a good job of covering the opponent. So that was really how I kind of broke into the business. My first locker room was Red Sox-Yankees. How lucky was I? But 04 was amazing. 2005 was great. I covered the ring ceremony at Fenway Park. So if you remember correctly, they actually played the Yankees.
Right.
Which was good. Yep, and my parents were there, so my father got to see the Red Sox get their rings, and it was kind of strange to be there at Fenway Park with my family working but covering the Yankees. So it's been interesting. It's been interesting, but I have to say, and everyone knows by now, I am a diehard Bostonian. I'm born and raised here. I'm as New England as they come, but covering the Yankees was really one of the greatest things I've really ever been able to do in my experience.
Just tell me you saw some of them. Just tell me you saw some of them cry in 2004. Just tell me.
I didn't. I'm so sorry. I did not. I did not see any of them cry. But if I did, I probably wouldn't tell you either. Because I'm really big on keeping secrets. My brain is a sports vault. So I won't even reveal the Ravens I saw crying in the Patriots locker room at Gillette Stadium a few weeks ago. What goes on in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse, Red.
That's good. Well, that's very, very admirable. I got to take it down a level, because I just when I get to talking about 2003, 2004, and it is, again, as I said, it's the depths of my existence and really the heights of euphoria. It was 2003 was almost like somebody died. It was a horrible thing. But then
right.
2004, and thankfully my dad was around to see that, because my dad passed away.
I know, mine too, thankfully. And 07. Was he there for 07? Was your dad?
No, my father passed in 2006, so at least he's not 2004.
So did mine.
Yeah. So at least they saw it. That's the thing I always cling to. At least they saw it happen once, which is phenomenal.
Yes, my father missed 06, 07 as well. He died in 2006. Something in common.
Was it tougher being a fan? No, because after New York, you went to Baltimore. Now, Baltimore's always been kind of a – Baltimore's so odd to me. The Orioles, have always, you know, shitty team for the most part, cellar dwellers of the East. But, man, they always seem to kick us in the nuts when we need it at least. And that last series of the 2011 season, particularly when it came down to us versus Baltimore,
right.
I was like, you know what, I'd almost rather be playing the Yankees right now than playing the Orioles.
It's a good point, but – and I don't know if you noticed, I fight with Baltimoreans all the time, and I actually got in a fight with them today about that whole series. So Orioles were 5-2 against the Red Sox in September, but overall that year they were 8-11, I believe. And of course they finished under 500 again. That was the 14th consecutive season they finished under 500. And Baltimoreans still say, take credit for knocking the Red Sox out of the playoffs. And my thing is, I think the Red Sox knocked themselves out. They were 7-20 in September. They were absolutely horrendous. They couldn't beat. They don't even know if they could have, you know, won a wiffle ball game with a bunch of blind people at that in September. And the Orioles are taking credit for knocking them out of the playoffs. You know, I think the Red Sox were to blame. My problem with Baltimore is just the way they handled it. I mean, I never liked the spoiler rule. I didn't like it when the Rays did it, when they weren't very good, when they were the Tampa Bay Rays in 05 and 06. I feel like you should be celebrating yourself winning and not celebrating somebody else losing. But, you know, that series and that game was so hyped up that the Red Sox got knocked out of. It was so hyped up in Baltimore because they had nothing positive to cheer for. I would have liked to have seen the Ravens go to the Super Bowl because I do feel bad for the fans and for the community. And I think Ravens fans are completely different than Orioles fans. But, you know, I'm going to, you know, throw some Bostonians under the bus. They were pretty angry prior to 2004 as well. You know, you do have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder when you're losing, and I think that's normal for anyone. I mean, even if you and I were turned down for jobs, you know, time and time again, or, you know, or dates, you know, you start to kind of, you know.
Now you're talking my language.
No. You start to be cynical and bitter and negative, and it was just, it's a very negative environment, especially with the baseball team. But let me tell you, those Ravens, That is a football city. It was such an honor covering that football team. I knew nothing about football before I started covering the Ravens, and I busted my ass for 3 or 4 months and asked a ton of questions to the players. I wasn't ashamed to ask questions. I would, you know, go over to Ray Rice and, you know, hey, Ray, I don't understand this. Can you help me? And, you know, I would talk to the defense about the gaps. And I, you know, I didn't even know the role of the cornerback 2.5 years ago, and now I know what a flea flicker is. So, you know, if you just put, you know, work into it and don't be afraid to ask questions, you know, I really believe any reporter can do anything. It's like, you know, you could report on a pie-eating contest if you just paid attention. But the baseball team, very negative. Football team, very positive.
I don't want to spend too much time on Baltimore, but how is Ray Lewis, really?
He's awesome.
Is he? Because honestly, he comes across as such a douchebag, I can't stand the guy.
Oh, goodness gracious, no. No, trust me, if he was a douchebag, I would say, guy's a douchebag. No, he's class act, in my opinion.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, very approachable. Did you guys hear his speech after the Ravens' loss in New England? He addressed the team and basically said, you guys pick your heads up. You have nothing to be ashamed of, and there is so much pain and so much anguish outside of this locker room right now, that this is the game of football. We have lives, we have families, there are people dying outside of this locker room of illnesses and you know, diseases, and, you know, I don't think he got into specifics, and he said, this is football. We have tomorrow, so many other people don't. Now get out of this locker room and go make somebody smile. And it was pretty awesome. And if you just ask any of his teammates who their inspiration is, it's Ray Lewis. And you know, the team was 4-0 in the four games that Ray Lewis missed in 2011. But it was funny because you would watch like the defensive huddles and the guys on defense, and you know, when the offense, the opposing team was in the huddle, you would see the defense looking on the sidelines and looking to Ray. And they said that he was the 12th man on the team. He was the 12th man on the defense that day. And some of the players even said after one or two of those wins without Ray Lewis, hey, you know what? Ray Lewis was our MVP today, and he didn't even play. So to really put into words how much he means to that ball club, I don't even know if I could put it into words, honestly.
I find it endlessly entertaining to read the some of the Twitter battles that you get into with some people. I occasionally will, you know, I'll get some tweets every once in a while and say, you know, I'm an asshole or fuck you, and those are just the ones my mother sends me. But I mostly ignore them or I block them. But you almost seem to relish the chance to tussle with the occasional meathead, and I like that about you. I think that's actually,
I mean,
kind of funny.
You know, I don't respond always. People always say to me, why do you respond? And, you know, I don't respond all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have a good zinger, then yeah, I'll respond. The thing that I learned is that if somebody tweets me and tells me I'm fat and ugly, and then I write back and say, no, you're fat and ugly, you know, the next day it's how unprofessional is Jen Royal, she called somebody fat and ugly.
Right.
And it's, But no, wait. They called me fat and ugly first. But then it's like, oh, who said what first? Two wrongs don't make a right. I get it. I try not to insult anybody or hurt somebody's feelings because I know what it's like to be insulted and to have my feelings hurt. But again, if I have a good zinger, I'm certainly, you know, I'm going to send it right back. I think Twitter is out of control. In fact, when I was leaving Baltimore, the Baltimore Sun had called me and wanted to do a story on me leaving Baltimore, and I said to him, you know what? I'll do it. I'll do the story under one condition. I don't want a comment section at the bottom of the story. And he said, wow, you know, no one has ever, ever requested that. And I said, nobody writes anything good. In fact, even if somebody had no idea who I was, what I did for a living, they might jump on and say, you know, screw that whore. You know, get this ugly bitch out of Baltimore just for fun. And I think the fact that, I don't know if it's good or bad that we're giving everybody a voice, because I had said this the other day in an interview I did, you know, Joe Schmo from Joe's sports blog can dedicate an entire page to how much I suck because he found 5 mistakes that I made out of 100. But, you know, Joe Schmo's sports blog isn't going to take the other 95 that I did great and say, well, look at how great she is.
Right.
You know, it's like if you go to a restaurant and you go have a really, really, really good meal, you're not going to go home and say, you know what, I'm going to go home, I'm going to go on the computer, I'm going to fill out the little comment section and say how wonderful this restaurant is, everybody has to eat here. If you go to a restaurant and you have a terrible meal, what's the first thing you do? I'm going home, I'm sparking up my computer, and I'm going to write about how much this place sucks and nobody should eat here.
That's before I'll indulge in my best efforts to get out of the bill. That's usually my first deal. After any meal, right? Good or bad. Do I have to pay for this?
People are so quick to write negative stuff. It's really a shame. And the problem with Twitter is that people send me such disgusting stuff, and then I'll quickly look at them, and they're A, not even following me, or B, live in Arizona and don't even look like they know anything about sports. It's just people who just feel like being rude. And it's sad.
Well, it's unfortunately, it's the way of the world. I mean, look at Denton. I mean, it's just the way people are.
I don't know
are.
Denton, but I did hear that you're pretty cheap at the bar. So you and I are going to have a problem if we're out boozing one night.
This is false accusations. I can't believe what
I don't know. Not what I hear.
That's what happens when you don't show up, you know, when you don't show up at the event. And actually, speaking of that event, you were just auctioned off at the Project Cupid Charity Date mm-hmm. Auction and pulled in some very big coin for the Jimmy Fund, which is awesome. Always a good time.
I know.
I was actually going to bid on you. You were the one.
Dude, you know what? Save it. You didn't even see me get auctioned off.
I didn't see it, but I would assume it's
some, like...
First of all,
don't bullshit a bullshitter.
Who's cheap now?
You showed up late.
I know. Visibly intoxicated. It was just awful.
You missed the moment.
Now, was it some, I'm guessing, like some jet-setting Arab grad student is the guy who won you, or... Are you allowed to talk about it? You might not be. I don't know. So it might be all...
No, I haven't spoken to him that often, but we've been texting back and forth. He's just a super nice, you know, normal guy. He lives in Belmont. And I actually think, if I heard him correctly, not that I wasn't paying attention, the place was really loud. I'm sure you noticed.
It was.
He's part owner, or he's one of the owners for Remy's.
Is it Remy?
Well, no, but you know, it's funny.
Jimmy?
We were walking up the stairs to get our picture taken, and I said, "So, you know, what brings you here?" And he said, "Oh, my restaurant donated a bunch of stuff." And I said, "Oh, what's your restaurant?" And he went, "Remy's." And I went, "Jerry, you look great." You know, this guy was like, you know, 32 years old, and he was like, "Oh, hearty har har." He's I don't know, involved in Remy's. So, that's my date. He paid, poor bastard, paid $600 for me, and I don't think he has any idea what he's in for Saturday night.
So what do you, here's just a little advice I'll give you. If you happen to be out on the date and the guy says anything like, you know, I got more candy out in the van, that's usually a bad sign. That's what they call a red flag. You know, any references to candy in a van, just don't go.
But, my goodness.
You know,
I would say, well, then go outside and get it. It's too cold out.
You know what you're going to be doing yet, or is that all just...
I do, yeah. Actually, it's funny because we, we got a gift certificate to a restaurant, and we're not even using it. I think he's just going to keep it and use it another time. He had texted me and said, you know, we don't have to go to the place that that came along with you. And I said, well, you know, we can do whatever. So we're going somewhere different.
Oh, okay.
I don't know where, though. I forget.
That's all right. We were planning on following you in video.
Stalking you is what I think. That's why I actually do know where I'm going. I just didn't want to tell you.
Don't.
Smart move.
You're learning very quickly.
$600 That's it. We could have bid on that.
Oh, we could have. We could have.
Well, if somebody showed up on time.
I know. Well, the problem with me is, you know, between the drugs and the alcohol and the restraining orders.
The problem.
Negotiating the city streets, I have to find a driver. I have to find. It's sometimes difficult. But anyway, that a phenomenal. It was very loud, but a lot of great money raised for the Jimmy Fund, which is
$21,000.
Wow. Great.
Yeah, I think it was they raised 9,000 last year, so 12,000 more from last year, which is incredible. And I already said count me in for next year, so that'd be exciting. I think I have to do what Heidi did though and come up with a better date.
She had the full Monty there. I shouldn't say the full Monty.
Well, she was smart. First of all, kudos to her. She was brilliant because I saw her interview with Nesson, and she said, you know, well, I got 4 tickets, and, you know, we're going to go on the field, and we're going to watch batting practice, and, you know, everyone's going to go to Remy's and have dinner and drinks. And I thought to myself, you know, this person could be, you know, the ugly, deformed guy from Goonies, and somebody is still going to spend $10,000 on this date because they want the field passes and they want, you know, they want the front row tickets, and then add a beautiful girl like Heidi into the mix. But she got 4 tickets, and she said, you know what, you can bring 2 friends, or you can bring 1 friend, and I'll bring a friend. So if I do it next year, if they are willing to have me back, I think I'm going to put together a cool sports package.
That is pretty awesome. And Dent and I promised to get there early the next time. And
we'll make sure
we're part of that. But it was a great event. I absolutely, and I'll tell you this because we're all friends here. I could not have made a bigger ass of myself in front of Heidi. She was there.
I'm not surprised. What'd you do?
I wanted to say something. I wanted to at least acknowledge her, just say hi and whatnot. And I went up to her, and her she was kind of, looked like she had a posse with her. She had like some friends, and I broke the card. Cardinal rule of any human interaction. Instead of just kind of approaching her from the front, I kind of went.
What, you grabbed
her.
Your ass?
No, I didn't do that. Well, I didn't want to spend the night in the pokey. I just I went up and I just sort of put my hands on her shoulders. You know how you do things inexplicably afterwards? You say to yourself, why did I do that? What was I thinking?
I don't think that's abnormal though.
Well,
I mean,
I kind of came up behind her and put my hands.
I mean,
on
if
her
you
shoulders.
Touched me, I would have knocked you out. But
exactly.
I'm just saying, I don't.
I just kind of went up, touched, and put my hands on her shoulders, and she turned around, and then I from there I just kind of lost it. I started babbling.
Then you got tased, and you don't remember.
I don't remember anything else. I woke up in a paddy wagon. I was gagged and bound. I don't know. I was in a trunk of a car in Chelsea somewhere. I don't remember anything happened after that. Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything happened. I'm visibly beaten, you know, bruised and whatnot. But it was a fantastic event. Just a couple of quick things just to try to get a few questions in there about the Red Sox.
Yeah, of course.
Last year, 2011, big off-season signings. Mm-hmm. We went into the year, you know, and I was guilty of it too, you know, tugging on my lapels and smoking the cigar and saying, we'll see you in the World Series. And then, you know, horrible end to the season. I had such high hopes last year, so I figure if I had those high hopes in 2011 and I kind of got gut punched, I'm going to keep it grounded in 2012. And my attitude is, if nobody dies, it's a good year. Mm-hmm. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, somebody asked me the other day who I'm picking in the World Series in 2012, and I said, you know, ask me in like the end of July.
Right.
You know, almost at the trade deadline. I mean, I don't even think you can tell in spring training. I mean, you can look at what's on paper, but the way players get injured these days, and it's all about the pitching staff staying together, and as we know, that's what happened last year with the Red Sox. You know, John Lackey was, you know, horseshit, and, you know, Josh Beckett fell apart, and, you know, you look at all the other injuries to the rotation, and then you look at Kevin Youkilis, of course, and then Cole Crawford. I mean, I can't even put into words what happened to this person. You know, we'll talk about Carl in a second, but you look at the year that Jacoby had, and it almost went to waste. because, right. you know, when someone has that great of a season, especially bouncing back from an injury, you want to see that guy go to the World Series. You know, he busted his ass in center field. Dustin Pedroia always does. You know, there were just so many factors, but September was such an embarrassment for the entire organization. And, you know, I don't even know if it had anything to do with the chicken and the beer, but something went wrong that only one person knows, and that's Terry Francona.
Right.
Honestly. He's probably the only person that knows really what happened. I think everyone just got cocky and felt invincible and got lazy and just felt entitled. And I'll be the first person to say it. I don't care who I work for. Well, I guess if I worked for NESN, and I couldn't say this. I never liked Josh Beckett. In fact, Josh and I had a run-in in, oh, it might have been 2006. And he treated me like a piece of crap. And from that moment on, I have never liked that person.
Really?
Yeah, I had such a horrible experience with Josh Beckett. And I remember going back into the Yankee clubhouse, and one of the players said, it was Jorge, was like, what's wrong? And I was like, Georgie, I just got the worst treatment from another human being in my life. And he's like, who? I said, Josh Beckett. You know, you've got to be kidding me to have someone talk to me the way he did. And it's that whole sense of entitlement. I think he's such a D-bag. Like, I don't have a lot of respect for him. And I do feel like he was, you know, the clubhouse cancer in that whole situation. I'm kind of going off track here. But Carl Crawford also, I mean, I've known Carl. I've covered Carl for, you know, really since the beginning of my career when he was with Tampa Bay, and Joe Maddon is one of my greatest friends in terms of managers. And, you know, if you look at Carl Crawford, he has never had any pressure on him, really, in his entire career. In fact, he was part of, obviously, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays when they were horrible, and then they became good, and it was almost a bonus for them if they won.
Right.
You know, I mean, in 2008, Crawford was probably looking around saying, is this really happening? Did we really do this? You know, he wasn't making as much money as he was in Boston. There wasn't a ton of expectations, and if Carl Crawford had a bad season, you know, he had B.J. Upton, he had David Price, he had Carlos Pena. There were so many other guys that they could look to, and a ton of other homegrown young talent that they could look to in Tampa. And then he got to Boston, and it was under the microscope. You know, you're in the spotlight, you're making a ton of money, you have to win, and guess what? Here is 40 media members in your face asking you why you went 0-for-4. Now, I do think that Carl Crawford is, I would like to think, more of a professional to be able to deal that sort of stress, but you have to, you know, really look at it and say, Crawford has never had to deal with any of this in his entire career. Any of it. So, hopefully he can bounce back next year, because we all know what kind of a player he is.
Oh, he can't get much worse, which is a sad thing to say, but it's true. It was such a disappointment.
It was tough to watch. It was hard to watch him, because I think everybody knew how much of a good player he was and how good of a person he is, and I think he was just shell-shocked from the whole experience. So,
I think two quick things about Tampa Bay. You had mentioned 2008. I think 2008 really, as an ALCS, gets underrated. Yeah, we lost, and it was miserable.
That was awesome.
But it was a phenomenal series.
Was awesome.
It was an edge of your seat. It was really, again, we don't focus on it much because the end result was not a good one for us, but it was a great series. If you
great.
Like baseball,
I mean,
it's a great series.
Yeah, anytime it goes to seven games, first of all, but, I mean, I think the good thing about that series, well, I mean, for me, was I just loved that it wasn't the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Right.
You know, I'm a baseball fan. I love that Texas has emerged. You know, even 2 years ago when Seattle made a ton of moves and Anaheim traded away pretty much anybody with any talent on their team, everyone said, oh, the Mariners, you know, watch this. They're going to step up in the West. And Texas came and was tremendous 2 years ago. I'm a fan of other teams and new rivalries. I think the Red Sox and the Yankee rivalry is the best in sports history. I think it's the best, hands down, but I love that another team is now in the mix, in that, you know, I love the Red Sox-Rays rivalry. I love the Rays and the Yankees rivalry. I love the fact that there is more competition in this division because I want the American League East to be the toughest division in baseball.
Right.
I'd like to see Toronto step up. You know, I think Baltimore has, I mean, ESPN came out with their power rankings over the next 5 years, and in 2017 they still had the Orioles ranked 30th. I know. Let's not bust on Baltimore. We're past that. But,
exactly.
I mean, you do want to see other teams step up. And I think the Red Sox and the Yankees, and maybe it's me because I'm a reporter and I'm on the other side of things, but it's exhausting. You know, it's exhausting for the managers. It's exhausting for the players. There's so much drama and work involved in the Red Sox playing the Yankees. I'll say it again. I think Joe Maddon is a tremendous manager. I loved that he was Manager of the Year last year, and just the job that he's done with that ball club, and Andrew Friedman and Silverman, the job that those guys have done building that farm system has just been remarkable, and it's been fun to watch.
You mentioned Joe Maddon. That was actually the second thing I wanted to mention about Tampa Bay, is that he's a guy who, and again, I don't know how he would do in a situation like Boston. Down there he had a lot of, you know, unproven talent, a lot of young players that seemed to rally behind him. You don't know what that would be up here, where you have a lot of guys who are used to doing things a certain way and have been doing it for a long time. But he's a guy I really would have liked to have seen managing here. He seems to have, obviously he knows his shit, but he also has a kind of weird, what I like in him is he has kind of a weird sense of humor, like a weird...
He's quirky.
Yeah, and I think that kind of thing would... I remember way back in the day, I don't know whether it was Jimmy Williams or Ralph Houck, might have been Jimmy Williams, but he showed up at a press conference at Red Sox and he like handed out grapefruit to the reporters. And I just thought it was so odd, but it was the kind of thing that... It's the kind of thing that you almost wish you saw a little bit more from your managers. Not that Terry Francona was humorless, but I think that kind of quirkiness would have played and served him well here if he was ever in the capacity in the Boston market.
Yeah, two things. I think it gets old for some players. I do.
Oh, his Grandpa Joe at it again.
Joe Pa.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I do think that, that, you know, maybe some things, oh, God, this again, we got to dress up again, we got to do this. I mean, I think everything takes its course. So, you know, you might think one guy is good in one situation, but... Again, even Terry, after 8 years, his welcome was kind of, you know, they started to not listen to him anymore.
Right.
I think the team needed a fresh voice, just like Tito said. But the other thing about Joe, I don't think in a million years he would have left what he started in Tampa. I think he's so proud of the job that he's done and the relationship that he has with Matt Silverman and Andrew Friedman, and just, you know, they work so well together. They're such a fly-under-the-radar, powerhouse little team. I really couldn't see Joe leaving and leaving what he had built in Tampa. And he's watched his guys. You know, the majority of those players are homegrown. You know, the David Prices and Evan Longoria and BJ and now Desmond Jennings in left field and Brignac. And, you know, there are so many players that came up in that farm system that Joe has really been able to watch them grow up and develop in front of his eyes. And I couldn't see Joe leaving for any job. I knew he wanted to stay in Tampa. And, yes, he's quirky, but he is, you could knock on his door and he will come in, sit down, and you can talk to him about, like, your love life, and he'll give you the best advice an hour before a game.
He is your grandpa. He's everybody's grandpa.
He's been, honestly, I tell him, he's been like a father to me since I started my career. And I've been really fortunate to be able to have Joe to lean on if I ever needed anything. And every time he was in Baltimore or New York, you know, quick knock on the door, and I would sit in his office, and it was always first, Jen, how are you? How are you doing? What's going on? Tell me this. Tell me that. You know, he's been my reference in almost every job that I've gotten, and I think he's a tremendous individual, and it's just been nice to see him get credit for it.
That's awesome. Now you got to get him on the podcast. We'll get both of you on. That'll be phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm probably not
going to
do that.
No. All right. Well, you've tremendous amount of information here, and all kinds of great insight, and greatly appreciated. I will ask you one final question: who would be your candidate for Red Sox Player of the Year for 2012? If you could kind of look in the crystal ball and look at what
the
season's
going to fall. It's not even spring training yet.
I know. This is just a parlor game. If you had to throw a name out there, who do you think is going to be the guy at the end of the year? Say, you know what? This is the guy who stood up. Who stood up this year? I'm going with Daisuke.
There's two guys. I hope it is. John Lester and Buchholz. You know, those are, I think, two guys in the rotation that you really root for.
Right.
Would not be Josh Beckett. Crawford. I want to see Crawford have a bounce back year. I think he has yet to show. Even my mother, Jen Crawford, this guy sucks. And I'm like, Ma, no, he's good. How can you say this guy's good? He sucks. I think that, you know, Crawford needs to show Boston, you know, really how good he is. And I don't think we've seen, you know, even a quarter of what Carl can do. So I'm hoping it's Crawford.
I agree.
Crawford.
I like to think deep down inside, although Boston fans are tough and everyone says, oh, you know, it's a tough market, tough to play in Boston. I think deep down we really want to see our guys do good.
Of
and I don't think there was any, there was no animosity, I think, towards Crawford. I think it was more, it was really just people genuinely wanted him to do good. And it was a great disappointment. I don't think it was venomous at all. I think it was just we want to see these guys do good. We want them to shine in these environments. He's a guy who loves the game, who loves playing, and if he had a fraction of the success he had down in Tampa Bay, that's really, you know, we were really pushing for him, I think, most of the year. And I would agree. I think he's a good candidate to I can't see him having two bad years in a row like that. I think he's going
to – No, and when you sign him to that kind of a contract – you know, I think as fans, you want to make sure that your money was spent wisely.
Right.
So, you know, you just don't throw 7 years and how many million? 150-something? Am I too high? I don't remember.
You know what? I stop paying attention once it goes over 100 because it's
monopoly
money to me at that point.
Money at somebody and then hope they suck. So, you know, we're all pulling to Crawford and, you know, hopefully it's him. Comeback Player of the Year, 2012. Just like Ellsbury.
I like that. That sounds good. Well, you've given us more of your time than we had expected. All kinds of great insight.
Yeah, I think I did too, actually.
But fantastic to have you here. And anything else we should know? Any place we'll be seeing you? Anything you need to plug? Anything else coming up?
Your date,
of course. Which when we get offline here, you'll tell Denton and I where you're going to be, so we can come and kind of
follow
that. Yeah.
Nope. I will not be divulging that information to anybody. My date is Saturday night. I will let you know if I make it home alive.
Excellent. We'll put a call in later on to make sure.
Yeah, that's important. I think Boston fans will see or hear me soon. So stay tuned.
Fantastic. Excellent. All looking forward to it. Jen, thank you. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you.
And hopefully
guys.
Hopefully we haven't scared you off and you'll come back again. And when you're on your date, remember what I said about the candy in the van. It's a trick. So just don't.
Well, I... assuming you're going to be sitting two tables over from us, so you can...
I'm actually going to be in the van. That's where that's the base of operations. So, Jen, thanks very much for your time. Hopefully we'll talk to you
again. All right, guys.
All right.
Just thanks, Jen.